This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Everybody, this is episode number 90 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Did you guys happen to catch the Lady Gaga concert last night?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
How incredible was that?
That was pretty so sweet.
Ugh. Yep.
I had to laugh, though. I got up this morning, and one of the first things I saw in my Facebook feed was people boasting about how they were so proud that it wasn't political. And I was just like, oh, girl, like, did we not see the same performance? Like, did you not see that she used military drones to make stars in the sky? And did you not see that she basically told hundreds of millions of people that it's okay, whether you're gay, straight, or bi, lesbian, transgender life, that somebody loves your ass? And it's just like, we must have watched two different performances because I felt there was quite a message there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really liked all of the commercials, too, that had a political undertone. I thought they were pretty well done.
Yeah, it was really nice to see Airbnb come out because Chris and I have used Airbnb in our travels. And I know we plan on probably doing that more in the future. And, you know, it's always a good feeling when it's brands that you already use. You know, whenever you see a brand speak up, there's always that hesitation. Of, oh, no. Oh, no, no. Oh, oh, oh. And then, you know, when it rules in your favor, when it comes out when they come out with a message you agree with, you kind of feel the sense of relief. But then sometimes you get ones where they say something. I used to be a big Uber user, and I remember everything was happening with the strike, and I deleted Uber, and I was just like, God, I wanted to give you money and I can't. And so yeah, I agree with you, Katie. It was really nice to see you know, people kind of standing up for things, and she was entertaining as hell. It was nice to see her sing a lot of her old favorites, because she doesn't really do telephone very much, and she certainly doesn't do Just Dance anymore, and so everything about it was just epic, and it was lovely.
She's so fit.
I know, right? Was I the only one expecting, like, a pregnant Beyonce to pop out during telephone?
I totally was.
I was.
Yeah, I also heard rumor that Tony Bennett was supposed to do the opening with her, and then he wasn't feeling well.
Aw, poor Tony.
Yeah. Yeah, so either way, it was just a completely star-studded, and it was, it gave me life, as the kids say, and I am definitely going to watch it some more in my free time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So before we get started with the show, we have a bit of an announcement to make. So a couple weeks ago, we got together to have a bit of a powwow to discuss our goals for the show going into 2017, what we wanted to do with the Patreon, and if we wanted to, like, play with the format of the show or anything like that. And Katie had mentioned that she's going to be starting her third year of veterinary school, which is going to turn out to be very demanding. And she had indicated that she is going to be very, very pressed for time, and that she may not necessarily be able to join us as much for the show or join us at all. And so the three of us remaining had to decide if we wanted to go on as a three-person show, or if we wanted to replace Katie, because Katie indicated that it was just going to be nearly impossible for them to make it. And so we pretty much decided unanimously that we did not want to do the show without her, that we started the show together. We've gone through everything together. We've grown together as a unit. Our faces are on the merchandise. You know, we are a unit, essentially, and that if one of us isn't going to be here, then it's simply not worth doing at that point. And so, we've decided that episode 100, which is going to be in about 10 weeks or so, is in fact going to be our last episode. We have also become much more busier since we started the show. I know, Hallie, you have a new job that you're working a lot of hours on. You have a relationship. You're a dog mom. You also do volunteering with LPS. You know, Chris, you're newly single. You're discovering more about yourself and your gender. You're also taking judge classes. I've been streaming. I have Magic Mics. I have all of my insanity going on. And it's just become a lot harder for us to get together every week to do the show, because of everything else that has happened. And so we just felt it was a really good time to sort of go out on a high note. You know, they say that you should leave while the party's still happening. You know, you don't want to be the last one there. And so we thought 100 was a really great milestone to sort of cap it on. And, we are, you know, still going to be in the community. We each have our projects going on and we're still committed to, the message of women in magic and minorities in magic. And we're still going to do that individually. Even if we aren't recording the show. But episode 100 will be our last show as the Girlfriend Bracket. And so we're going to try to make the next 10 episodes the best we can be, best we can do. We're going to try to have guests on that we've never had before and really just kind of go out with a bang. So hopefully, you know, you all understand and that you continue to follow us even when we're not doing the show anymore, because it's been a really wild ride. It'll be 2 years that we've been doing this and we've come a really long way and we absolutely couldn't have done it without you. And so, we thank you so much for listening to us and growing with us, and hopefully you'll continue to do that even when we aren't doing the show anymore. So with that said, though, there was something additionally fantastic that happened this past weekend. In addition to the Super Bowl, it was the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I believe we all got to tune in at different points. And, I really enjoyed this Pro Tour. I felt like overall the production value was definitely there. You could definitely see that they, increased the production value in terms of like the staging, in terms of the graphics on screen, in terms of how everybody looked. You know, Hallie, why don't you start us off? What did you think of the Pro Tour?
I agree. I thought the production value was amazing. I thought that, it was just really impressive to see them really step up their game. I thought, you know, the features in between rounds, the pre-recorded features were great. I thought the use of the video wall was really great.
Yeah.
I thought Gabby did an awesome job interviewing people at the video wall. This was her first time sort of having the anchor job instead of the commentator job. And I thought she did really, really well there. So that was really awesome to see. And as I've mentioned on the last several shows, I had a horse in the race this time. A good friend of mine, my friend David, was playing in the Pro Tour, this weekend, and he actually had his name on the leaderboard very early on day one. I believe he was, 3-1, after the first four rounds. And so he got to be on the leaderboard, and I saw his parents like taking screenshots and posting it on Facebook. It was really cool to see, you know, how many people from our local game store and just from his family and from, you know, his old Magic community in Ann Arbor were all cheering for him. It was really, really cool to see that. He did not, I want to say, I think from talking to him, I think he met his expectations or exceeded them in some ways. He finished 8-8, which is, you know, no small thing at your first Pro Tour. He went 5-3 on the first day, which was really cool. And the second day, it sounded like it was a little bit more difficult for him. And he did the opposite and went 3-5 on the second day. But he faced some really stiff competition. He played against, I want to say, 4 Hall of Famers and beat 3 of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So he basically just had nothing but good things to say about the experience and said that, you know, even though he didn't necessarily cash or top 8 or anything, he would not trade the experience of, you know, playing against the best Magic players for anything. And it sounded like he felt like he leveled up quite a bit, and, you know, playing against some of his heroes, like Magic players that he's always admired, was a really great experience for him.
Now, Pro Tours, and I know we've talked about this a little bit in the past, you know, especially, well, this was his first Pro Tour, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, typically, you know, when people go to their first Pro Tour, they usually leave with one of two reactions. You know, either it lights a fire in them and they're determined to go back. Like, they're like, I want to play at nothing but this level. Like, I don't want to go back to PPTQs. I don't want to go back to FNMs. I just want to do this. Or they kind of say, you know what? This was cute. This was fun. I learned something, but no. And it sounds like he was pretty firmly in the first camp.
Yeah. From what I could see, it seemed like he just had a great attitude about it. That he loved being able to play against the best Magic players in the world and being able to prove himself or try to push himself to compete on their level. And it sounds like, I mean, I haven't had a chance to really debrief with him because he's still on his way back from Ireland. But I'm sure when he comes back, we'll talk. And it does sound like the fire is burning. Like, it does sound like he wants to go back. And the funny thing for me is that now watching him, like, seeing someone that I play with regularly do that well on that large a stage makes me think, wow, if he can do this, then I can do this. Like, it's not that much of a stretch. So I'm really excited. And, you know, I'm shuffling some things around in my life to try to accommodate playing Magic more. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to get there too before too long.
We've always known, like, I think I speak for all of us on the show, we've always believed that you could play at that level, Hal.
Mm-hmm. I think so sometimes you've believed it more than I have.
No. And I'm thrilled that you are, I'm thrilled that your own fire has been renewed as well. And I hope that you do, you know, follow through on that. And I do hope that you're able to make it work, because we've always believed in you. And so I hope that, you know, pans out for you to some degrees. I think it's totally possible.
Oh, thanks.
So what was the meta like? Because I know going into this, you know, we've talked the last couple of weeks about you helping your friend prepare, and we were kind of keeping up with the shifts, you know, pre-ban, post-ban. And when you look at this, you know, when you see that there were six copies of Mardu vehicles in the top eight, you see that Black-Green Constrictor was still a big deck. You see that Saheeli Rai had a very small conversion rate, and that not a lot of the pilots went to day two with it. You know, was this what you and your friend predicted?
To a certain extent, yeah. I think we definitely thought that, the copycat deck and the black-green deck were gonna be big. We didn't see Mardu vehicles being as popular as it was, or being as successful as it was, though, I guess it was a very good foil to the Saheeli deck, as we saw. It just made it impossible for that deck to do well in this event. I think David decided to go in a very different direction. He, believe it or not, ended up playing a black-blue Metalwork Colossus deck at this Pro Tour. And he did that because we were testing against the Saheeli deck quite a bit, and he just really fell hard for Pacification Array, the one mana artifact that you pay two mana to tap something with. He just thought that card was a good meta call, and he wanted to play a control deck. He wanted to play Fumigate. He wanted to, you know, be able to, you know, be the control player, because, you know, he is a control player. That's what he naturally gravitates to. And he was convinced that the Saheeli deck was not the best control deck. And so we spent, I guess the last night before he left for Ireland, he went, you know, a week in advance so that he could adjust to the time difference. And, we were just playing control mirrors, like, the whole, you know, last 2 days before he left, because he was convinced that, like, he wanted to find a control deck that could beat the Black-Green Constrictor deck. The Mardu Vehicles deck wasn't even on his radar, I guess. And I guess while he was in Ireland, he was jamming games on Magic Online, and he just found this deck, and it seemed like the thing for him to play. And it seemed like he had, you know, some success with it, at least. He really liked his black-green matchup, I think. And he was pretty happy with it in that regard. But yeah, he said that, you know, he lost to vehicles, or, he, you know, the vehicles matchup was very close for him. So it seemed like that was the deck to beat, and it's something that we maybe should have tested more, but we just weren't sure how it was going to do without Smuggler's Copter.
There was a lot of talk this past weekend, you know, going back to that top eight, you know, six Mardu vehicles, you know, when you do go through the deck list, you know, we were assembling links for the show, and Wizards has the, you know, 18 to 21 point deck list and the 22 to 25 point deck list. And, you know, I couldn't help but feel like I was seeing the same lists over and over again. And Katie, there was a lot of criticism this weekend of the bannings, and some people going, well, you know, swell bannings you've got there, you know, Standard is just as stale, if not more stale, than it was pre-banning. And, you know, people already talking about what might need to change the next time around. And, you know, do you think that those responses are valid, or do you think that things are going to change after the Pro Tour?
I personally think things are going to change. I really like the Mardu Vehicles deck, and while it was very prevalent, I think that when you see a deck that does this well and is the, you know, six of the top eight deck list, I feel like people are more fired up to try and beat that deck, as opposed to something that gets like three or four in the top eight. You know, it's, it, it might be more like a let's join them and get on that bandwagon while we can. But when it's so prevalent, I feel like it kind of brings the brewers out in force a lot more the weeks after the Pro Tour to try and adapt to if everybody thinks everyone else is playing Mardu vehicles, let's play something to try and beat it. And I don't know if we saw a very good response in the way of a deck that beats Mardu vehicles this weekend, which is why so many made the top eight. So I feel like nobody was really sure what to expect, except for those who are hardcore testing for the Pro Tour after the last bannings. But I don't think, I still like the decision to ban the cards that were banned. I like that we weren't just seeing Smuggler's Copters everywhere. And I think that in the upcoming weeks, we will see an adjustment. And I think that it will be less stale than just the Pro Tour was.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, there were a couple articles, you know, postmortems that went around after the Pro Tour, and they brought up two really good points. One, if an aggro deck is popular and that's your only problem, that's a good problem to have because, you know, aggro decks can be dealt with, you know, fairly reasonably. But you know, when you're trying to deal with a turn five Emrakul, you're trying to deal with a Marvel deck, you know, that's a little more, it's a little harder to brew up answers for that. Whereas with aggro, it's like, okay, board wipes, life gain, kill spells, go. Like, you know, you're not really having to strain to try to fight that. And so, you know, if that's the deck that's sort of saturating the Pro Tour, that's a deck that we can most likely come up with and, you know, most likely adjust to. And so I think that's a good thing. And, you know, also, frankly, the deck did what it was supposed to do. It's like, you know, Saheeli was rumored to be the deck to beat. And, you know, if you were, you know, that was the point of the weekend was, can you deal with Saheeli Rai? Can you deal with that deck? And so people played Mardu vehicles to deal with it. That's what you're supposed to do at a Pro Tour. Because you know that if they didn't and Saheeli was this dominant, we'd be having the same conversation, only it would be, why didn't anybody beat Saheeli? You knew Saheeli was coming. And so, you know, I feel like this was the point of the Pro Tour. These people identified a target and said, this is what we need to beat. It wasn't necessarily about breaking the format like it might have been in previous Pro Tours. It was simply, we need an answer to Saheeli Rai. And that's what happened. The Mardu vehicles showed out. Saheeli had a terrible conversion rate, and that's what it was supposed to do. And so I don't think that anything necessarily needs to be banned. I also agree that the format that's going to adjust. And, you know, I thought a lot of it was just blown way out of proportion.
Yeah. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if we see more people trying to, you know, fit Walking Ballista into more shells, because that's a card that deals with Mardu vehicles pretty well. Mardu vehicles plays a lot of one toughness creatures, and Walking Ballista can just like ping, 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 get rid of all of them. And that was, you know, one of the reasons why the deck was not on our radar, because we thought, oh, everyone's playing Walking Ballista at the SCG tournaments. You know, these Mardu vehicles decks play lots of X1s. This deck isn't going to do well. But I guess, you know, if we had a lot of people playing, you know, Saheeli and other control decks, and, you know, other people playing Mardu vehicles, and not enough people playing Walking Ballistas to try to counter the Mardu vehicles decks, then that's sort of where you see that, that meta shift.
Chris, I remember you saying on Twitter today, Star City Games recently revealed that they're going to be not doing the... So they had Smuggler's Copters playmats. And then after the Smuggler's Copters got banned, it was hella awkward. And so they announced today that they're going to be replacing them with Aether Hub playmats. And so Chris was saying that if we end up going to SCG Indy this month, that they're going to maybe have to play a standard classic. And so, you know, if you were to play standard, Chris, you know, what would you play? Like, did anything at this Pro Tour intrigue you?
I thought that the Sultai Delirium control deck looked kind of interesting, and there was some talk about that it might be a good deck that's under the radar that can deal with Mardu vehicles. So maybe that. There's nothing that's out there right now that really speaks to me. Then again, I just got back from the shop buying cards for a probably terrible deck that I just kind of want to build for standard, because I want to play Aetherborn and I just want to use cards from Kaladesh and Aether Revolt and kind of see what happens with that. And so just trying to make sure I have enough spells to deal with a Mardu vehicle situation. I've been out of standard for so long that it's like, I don't even know. Like, I'll probably get like rickety wrecked, but if I get a sweet playmat out of it, then it's okay. But I'd like to give standard another try. I know that our local game store is offering a bunch of incentives to play standard right now. Like, you play, I think, six standard events, you get like promos or something. If you play eight standard events, you get raffles to win exclusive playmats that are only, that are from Amonkhet, but you can only get them through this type of incentive, I guess. And then if you do 10 standard events, you can like get in a raffle to like win a box of Aether Revolt or something. So, I mean, I think people are definitely trying to push standard because I think that it's been noticed that the format has been stale, that there really hasn't been very many shakeups, but they want people to play standard. And I would like to. There's just not much that really has been catching my eye. And even with the copycat decks, I will say I was pleased as punch that none of them did very well, because it just seems like it's very difficult to try to assemble that combo effectively and be able to go off without having one part of your combo get nuked before you're able to go off. And, you know, that's unfortunate for them. I know what it's like to not get all your combo pieces when you would like to, but it's just kind of like, eh, I don't know. I feel like we would need something else. So maybe those types of decks would be able to survive depending on what we get in Amonkhet. So maybe Jeskai Saheeli will kind of fade into the background for a little bit, but maybe we'll come back if there are other cards that would make it easier to get to that combo. But I thought it was boring, so that's why I was like, eh, I want to see something else do well. I was actually sad that Grixis didn't do so well. I had really had high hopes for Grixis in Standard, but I guess not. And I thought it was hilarious that Paradoxical Outcome didn't do shit, and that's great, because I've had to play a couple games versus people that want to get cute with Paradoxical Outcome, and I'm over it.
Oh, try playing it at Vintage when you lose on turn one of your upkeep.
Gross.
Yeah. It's a whole other ball game.
Yeah, nope. I'm not there for it. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what Standard brings, but I'm going to play my Jank. See how it goes.
So Saffron Olive was one of the people who wrote a postmortem, and he did a really good job of sort of highlighting the unique archetypes, you know, whichever ones there were. And one thing that really jumped out to me is how affordable a lot of these decks were. I think the most expensive deck here was a little over 400. And that was the Black Green Delirium, which, hello, it's been expensive, you know, no surprise there. But, you know, when you look at four color copycat, $257. You look at blue red control, again, $257. Grixis control, $279. This is fairly reasonable for, like, you know, pro tour standard decks. Team or either works at $215. You know, Chris, you mentioned the control list. That's a little high, like $425, but that's mostly because of Liliana. But, you know, it does feel like, you know, there are decks you can play if you want something more unique, and it does seem like they're affordable. So it's nice to hear that cost isn't necessarily a barrier to getting into standard like we're used to in the past. And, you know, there's some clever decks here. I like the Black Red Zombies deck that was piloted by Marcelino Freeman. It does seem like Scrap Heap Scrounger was everywhere. Mm-hmm. I was rooting for that card. Yeah. Team or Either works. I actually really like this deck, and it's only $200. I would play this. I would totally build either work because it's completely my style of deck. And then there's the Jeskai copycat list, Grixis control, blue red control. You know, more outside of the decks though, you know, were there any moments in particular that you really enjoyed from the Pro Tour?
I really liked the chanting.
Yes.
I was reading over Megan's top five moments, what she thought were the top five moments. I was really kind of following her coverage throughout the weekend and was enjoying what she was writing about, but she talked about the chanting into the finals, and I had that on in the background. Like I had the Pro Tour going while I was like studying, and I played like a couple games of Overwatch, and Anthony was like, "Who's that hollering in the background?" And I think that's like all of the like Latins cheering on their teammates who just got into the top eight. But I really liked that show of solidarity because, you know, there's been a few discussions about whether or not it's good to, like, show emotion when you win a match or the best way to handle winning in the top eight where you know somebody else's dream is kind of being, you know, crushed in front of you. But you're also proud of yourself, and that's, like, a lifetime goal for a lot of Magic players is to top eight a PT. And I think it's really nice when, you know, people take pride in it and are proud of their friends as well. So I thought that was a very touching moment and very cute.
It also extended into social media. I tend to keep up with events through hashtags because we were at regionals, which we'll talk about soon. And so we weren't able to, you know, watch a lot of the coverage as it was happening also because of the time zone difference. But there was a Brazilian Twitter account, I believe. I can't remember the name of it, but it was asking people to send selfies of them watching the Pro Tour. And if you clicked on the hashtag, there were so many smiling faces that were completely there for their Brazilian pride, their Portuguese pride. And you were seeing people of like different ages and genders and backgrounds, and they were all just smiling with a TV on in their background or a monitor or two monitors or whatever. And you know, that's just something we haven't seen before from a region or from a country. And so, and it was multiple people. Like I'm scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And at first I thought it was just the same one because Twitter sometimes is really bad about retweets, but oh no, they were all different and they were all just thrilled. And I was like, God damn it. Like that is so awesome and so positive. And I loved seeing each and every one of their smiling faces. And so, I couldn't have been happier for the Dex team and for all the, you know, the guys who won. And, it was just a spirit that I don't think I've ever really seen before at the Pro Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure. I really loved how the rollout of the team series went. I thought, it was a really great way to show, you know, another dimension of the Pro Tour. Like we think of Magic as this individual, competition in a lot of ways it is, but, you know, my favorite way to experience Magic is with a team. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, Team Magic. I love Team Limited. I'm excited to possibly have opportunities to play Team Constructed this year. Like Magic is definitely, you know, moving in, you know, in the way of teams as we've seen more and more, you know, grinders, not just, you know, the biggest name players, but up and coming players start these teams that have ascended to become super teams as we've seen with like East West Bowl and some of the teams in other countries. And I thought, you know, the team series was a really great way to highlight that. It gave us a lot of really great content, in between the matches. It was really cool to see, you know, all the teams go all out with, you know, their swag and, you know, to see their camaraderie, to see, you know, players tweeting out results, not just for themselves, but for their teams, which was really neat. And I just really liked the togetherness of it. I thought that was really cool and something that I'd like to see a lot more of in Magic.
Yeah, and it even extended to the videos. You know, they were doing some of the vignettes of like, you know, visiting the houses of like the different teams. And I remember they interviewed the Card Hoarder team, which was one of the newer teams on the scene. And Noah Walker was talking at one point, and he said that he was like, you know, not only am I here, but he's like, I love my friends. And it was just a really great moment that, you know, we've heard before from pros who say, you know, this is cute and all, but like, I'm really here because of this. And I remember when I had LSV on my show back when I was doing the deck tease, and he said, Paul Cheon makes the Pro Tour for me. And so, you know, that's something that we tend to forget sometimes, that, you know, these guys are going to not only do well and get glory and maybe a check at the end of it, but, you know, they're having fun. Like they're staying in a house with some of their best friends. And that's something that really needs to be brought up sometimes, is that you're meant to do this with people to some degree. And I really loved that Noah brought up that message, and that was really sweet. Mm-hmm. And the jerseys were nice too. I thought they were a nice fit. Some of them were a little ill-fitting. but the ones that were nice and fitting, it was a good look. I really appreciated it. Somebody on Twitter gave me the business the other day. There was the Team Puzzle Quest group picture, and I had cropped it down to just read, because I was like, all right, this is better. This is really what people want to see. And somebody caught wind of it and then photoshopped his face on all of their other faces. And it was the creepiest thing I'd ever seen.
I saw that. That was hilarious.
And then Helene Bergio retweeted it, and it just all went wild. So I apologize in advance. I had no idea it was going to go there, but it was sweet for a little while. So while the Pro Tour was happening, Chris, you and I were at regionals, also known as SCG Water Park. It was literally at a water park. Key Lime Cove in Gurnee. If you ever get a chance to go, it looks like it's a really good time. Very sweet venue. How did you do?
Well, I crashed and burned.
Same.
However, I felt like I learned a lot about myself and how I felt about how I played that day. The first round, I was paired up against a tooth and nail deck that also is kind of Ponza-esque, and I couldn't quite figure out what he was doing, and I had a very difficult time trying to board effectively and play effectively versus him. much to my chagrin, he was like a table three later. but that was kind of a disappointing loss. The positive that happened around that first round, though, was there was a gentleman that was playing next to me, and his girlfriend was sitting behind him, and she's supposed to be studying for this test or something. But I noticed that she hardly ever flipped any of the pages in the book throughout the day because she was mostly watching him because she's learning how to play. And when I was done with my match, she was like, "Did you win?" And I was like, "No, no, it was very bad." I'm like, there wasn't a lot I could do. And so I'm trying to explain it to her because I don't know how much she knows already. And she just seemed really hyped that, you know, that I was there, that I played, and she's really excited about wanting to play. And I don't know. It was just really nice to see someone that is new to the game, a lady player that's just really enthusiastic about wanting to soak up as much knowledge and the tournament scene and just watching him play. Like, later on throughout the day, I was thinking, you still on the same page. You're watching this game. You're not studying shit. It's like, you're loving this, and I love this. So if I see her again, I definitely want to, like, get to know her better because she seemed really cool. So that was the positive. I then went on to play versus Infect. That was less than ideal.
And I knew her opponent. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes. And so I wasn't really sure how Infect matchups were going to go now. I figured the deck is still good. Was it nuked by not having perfect information? Sure. But it seems like, just like I had talked about like a couple shows before, they're going more heavy on ground swell now. Just kind of seems like going all in, but blindly, and just being like, if this works out, cool. And if not, oh well. So I kind of got wrecked a little bit by Infect. But that's how that goes sometimes when I play against them. So I don't worry about it too much. It's either going to happen or it's not. So that was a little bit of a disappointing loss. Like, man, I was hoping I'd have one up on them, but I guess not. Then I played Bant Eldrazi, and I have played against this opponent before, so we always have good matchups. And so I say to him, we have to stop meeting like this, because I literally didn't even have to leave the state to play him. So it was just kind of like, can I play someone I've never met before? So he was worried about me because he's like, you're like my worst matchup. I was like, well, let's just, you know, let's not get too hasty. Let's kind of see what happens. So I ended up losing to him out of three. The third game was like super close, but I felt that I played that match very well. So even though I lost, I still felt good about how I played. Bant Eldrazi, I don't have much to bring in against them in my sideboard. It's kind of like, well, I guess we'll throw these ballasts in and see what happens. Went on to, like, smoke burn. That was wonderful. The person I was playing was new to playing burn. He mostly plays, like, Ad Nauseam and some other decks, and he wanted to see what burn was about and see if it was his thing. The post-mortem of our match was he wasn't about it. I thought he played very well for not, you know, knowing a lot about the deck or sequencing with it necessarily. So I was like, well, maybe it's just not for you, but deck is good. So let's just get that clear. So that was my first win. So I was like, yes, we're 1-3 now. We can maybe do this.
On the board.
Yep. I was like, a win against Burn is a win in my book all day. Lost to Infect in the subsequent round versus a judge friend of my judge friend, Blake. That was very sad because I was like, not Infect again. Give me something else. I'll even play against Goryeo's Vengeance. Just no Infect. So that was a disappointing loss. Then round six, my opponent no-showed. So I was like, well, I guess it's free Planeswalker points. So I guess I'll just mill around and do whatever till then. And then the seventh round, I'm trying to remember what my opponent opened up with, but I had a sinking feeling like the first two things he played, and I was like, I have a bad feeling this is Lantern Control. I'm like, I really hope it's not Lantern Control. And then, like, by the third turn, I was like, I don't want to do this. So I told him, like, you're a very nice guy. I said, but I really just, I do not like this deck, and I don't scoop, like, ever. But I was like, I'm already feeling down. I don't want to get kicked a little while I'm down and have the knife twist in a little more. So I'm just going to gracefully scoop and go off with my dignity, like, into, like, the corner for a little bit or something. So he was like, oh, and I'm just like, no, I can't. And he's like, I understand. I get it. I went on to play Jund after that, and I, like, just wrecked Jund. It felt so good because sometimes Jund, like, is like the boogeyman for me. Like, even though some people or most people or whatever will say I'm fairly favored in that matchup, I sometimes just shit the bed with it. And so I was just like, well, I'm just going to play as best as I can. And I was just like, yes, we were victorious. So felt good to beat Jund. So another W. Cha-ching. And then I had to play one of the most painful matches of Magic I've ever had to do. And it was versus Blue-White Emeria.
Nope.
And I love that deck. Like, but it's just, it took me forever to, like, find an answer, and I was flooding, like, so poorly, and I was like, oh my god, why is this happening? And every time I thought I drew an answer, I'm like, well, this is the third search for tomorrow we've drawn. This does not help us. We need to do something about the Sun Titan. We need to do something about this. They got ley lines for days. What do? So it just, it was three games. The third one was just, like, absolutely abysmal. And of course, like, this guy that I met at the tournament that I was like, ooh, he's kind of cute. He comes up and he's watching me, and I'm like, I'm doing so badly right now. Please do not be here right now. This is going to be so bad. So I ended up losing to Blue-Eyed Amiri. But the kid I played was very lovely. He was very funny. He was like, oh, I forgot about this again. Or, like, I wasn't going to let him have his trigger after he forgot it, but there were other little things that I was like, it's fine. It's fine. Yep, you can do this. Yep, I don't care. It's like, it's totally fine. We're just playing NBD. And so all in all, we had a good game, but it was just immensely frustrating just because I was like, I have this almost in the bag. Why can we not find an answer? So it was kind of sad. But overall, I feel like I played very badly. I feel like the two matches that I did win, I played very well. Bant Eldrazi, I think I played well, but overall it just felt like I was flooding really poorly, I was drawing really poorly, and I had a bad energy. And I knew it, like, after probably the third or fourth round, I was like, something just isn't right today. And I was just like, my heart's not in it like it would normally be. And I was super hyped. Like, don't get me wrong. I was like, fuck yeah, we're going to play Modern. This is going to be awesome. It's going to be great. But it just felt different. So something definitely felt off. So I'm hoping I can kind of get myself in a better mindset before Indy, because I really do like playing competitively. I had some bad matchups, admittedly. And I feel like I got in my own head. And like I said, something just felt wrong. So that was disappointing, but overall, I'm still glad that I went. I loved being able to hang out with people between rounds, especially people that remembered me from other tournaments, and they were just like, they'd see me cross room and, like, want to pounce on me, be like, oh my god, you're here, and oh, and just catch up and talk, and like, just meeting people and checking out people's decks. Are like, oh, hey, this is what my friend's building. What do you think of it? And just getting to catch up with people between rounds. How'd you do? Bad, good, oh, that sucks, or, oh, that's awesome, you're doing great. And so that made up for all the losses. I mean, because at the end of the day, that's why I go to a tournament, is I want to socialize and hang out with people. And it's nice to win, too, but I like having, as we were talking about before with the Pro Tour, having that type of camaraderie with other people. And so that made everything worth it. And I got to see Erin and her friend James, and I got to meet him for the first time, and that was really nice. And all in all, a good time was had by all. And if that cute boy calls, even better.
Oh my goodness. Okay, yeah. So I kind of had the same problem as you, Chris. I was mulliganing my brains out. There were a couple games where I mulliganed to like 4 or 5, and not even like a good 5. And I just signed the slip. I was like, you know what? I have nothing. Like, this is not going to go well. here's your win. Like, nice to meet you, but I have nothing. And so I haven't mulliganed that much in quite a long time. I ended up taking Dredge. I felt pretty good going into it. Affinity had become the number one deck on Magic, MTG Goldfish's metagame report. And so that's really good for Dredge. We have a really good, Affinity matchup. All the blogs were predicting that Abzan Company was going to make a really big comeback. And we also have a very good Abzan Company matchup. So, going into the weekend, there wasn't really a deck that I didn't want to see. Like, I felt pretty good about most things. There were cards I didn't want to see, but there wasn't really decks I didn't want to see. Like, I felt good about Tron. I felt good about Jund. I think the only deck I didn't want to see was Ad Nauseam, but I just assumed that it wouldn't be very much of it, and that was fine. So I felt very good going into it. The first game that I played was against Chris's friend Donnie. He was on Black-Green Tron. I had to mulligan to five both games, and again, not good vibes, and he was running main deck Relics. So that was a bad scene. And then he pretty much slammed Ugin on turn four every time. And Ugin is the one card from Tron that we give a shit about. Like, if you're playing Dredge and you got a Wyrmcoil, we'll be here a while, but I can deal with it. If you play Karn, that's cute. You still go and die. Ugin's really the only card that Dredge worries about, because we just cannot beat a resolved Ugin. If I have Conflag in the graveyard, I can do it. But if it's slammed on turn four, you're making me dance. And just every time I didn't have an answer for it. So he got that game. I ended up playing Affinity game two and smoked it. Of course. At game three, I played a young man that was on Eldrazi Tron. And this was something that I'd also heard that people were starting to play. And I don't really know why. Like, we talked before on the show about don't play a worse version of something else. And it's like, mm-hmm. I don't understand the reason for the deck. Like, you can play Tron. Tron is very good right now. You can also play Eldrazi. Eldrazi is quite good right now. Why are you doing both? Like, it just feels really cute. And I saw a couple people on it and I was just like, oh, girl. And so ended up beating that one. And he, I think, did not have much experience against Dredge, because the first time I dredged, he was like, what are you casting? And I was like, I'm dredging. And he goes, what's that? And I was like, so dredge is a replacement effect. I was like, it just means that I'm going to put this in my hand and then I'm going to mill four. And he was like, oh. And so throughout the game, he was having to consistently read my cards. And so I don't think his deck was bad against me. I don't think that he was bad. I just think he was very inexperienced against the matchup, because he didn't seem to have the faintest idea of what I was doing. So I ended up winning that one 2-0. Faced a really sweet Merfolk player next. We both had EC initials, which was very sweet. His name was like Eric Christensen or something. Fucking Kira. Merfolk players, listen to me. I know a lot of you have stopped using Kira. No. Put her back in. She's bananas. She is the reason I lost game three, because so we go to game three and I end up dredging my green sources in like the first dredge. So both my stomping grounds are gone. And what we really need to in that matchup is Knot of the Bone. We need the life gain, because we're basically racing them. And so getting off like a Knot of the Bone for like, you know, 14, 16 is really what's going to save your butt here. And so I didn't have any green sources. I was basically playing Grixis dredge at this point, which is really painful, because you can't loam and you can't Knot of the Bone. So you're really having to use what you have. And so I dredged a couple Conflags, and then Kira comes down. And it wouldn't be so bad if Kira's ability also didn't benefit her. Like, you'll notice a lot of cards in Standard, it's every other creature or like each other creature. Oh no, it protects her too. And I also found out from a judge, I thought I was going to be really sneaky and just target people multiple times with the Conflagrate. And the judge was like, no girl, it targets all at the same time. And so I had like two or three Conflags in the board. I had a nice fat hand and I couldn't fry some fish. And so my plan A was to get off a Knot of the Bone so that I could win the race. And plan B was to fry some fish. And Kira pretty much put the kibosh on that. And so Kira really was the MVP in that game. And I just, like I said, a lot of Merfolk players don't run her anymore. Y'all need to fix that, because she's broken. I think I spent the next 5 minutes after that game, and he knew that I wasn't yelling at him. He knew that I wasn't yelling. I had a big smile on my face, but for like a good 5 minutes after that game, I was just like, fucking Kira. Just that card was the craw, the nail in my craw. What is it? The something craw, but something. She was the problem. And so if it weren't for Kira, I could have won that game. Otherwise, I faced a really sweet lady that was on Burn. She just drew really poorly and I got a couple Knot of the Bones off. I faced a young man that was on Jund. He slammed Scavenging Ooze on turn four and I had no answer. So that ran away with the game. And then I ended up mulliganing a four and I just signed the slip for him. So I dropped a 3-5. A lot of mulligans happened. I feel like when I was able to play the game, I feel like I played very well. I don't think that Dredge was the problem. Like, I don't think that Dredge was a mistake. I can't say that I lost games because I took Dredge, other than the Scavenging Ooze thing, which they main deck it, so that can happen. And the, you know, the main deck Relic from Tron. You know, other than that, I don't really feel like I lost because I was playing Dredge. It was either I had bad Dredges or I had to mulligan a bunch. And so, that felt pretty good. I can't say my deck choice was the problem necessarily. The event was run pretty well. I do feel like the venue, the conference room that we were in was really uncomfortable. It was really cramped. A lot of the tables weren't the same height. We were pretty much elbow to elbow for most of our games, which I think contributed to, you know, Chris, you mentioned things not feeling right. You know, the last regionals we went to, we had so much room. And in this one, we really were almost like sardines. So that might have contributed to the feeling of being uncomfortable. Our friend James ended up finishing 7-2. He was 7-1 going into the last round and ended up losing his last one, unfortunately. But he did cash, which was really dope. And I want to talk about a young man that we found, 12 years old, was slaying. He was on Merfolk. He was at table one, like near the end of the day. And unfortunately, he had some bad beats. And I think he lost like 2 or 3 in a row. So he finished 6-3. He cried. I think he came up to Chris and was crying. And as we were leaving, so our friend James had, you know, signed his tax forms, you know, figured out what he got. And as we were leaving, we saw this young man sitting on the floor and he was looking at his phone and I could hear like some sniffles. And I got down on my knee and I was like, look, I was like, I'm going to tell you something. I was like, you kicked a lot of butt today. I was like, you should feel very proud. I was like, I went 3-5. I was like, you did amazing. I was like, I don't want you to look at this day and think this is all you are. This is all you did. I was like, you crushed. You should be really proud of yourself and you need to keep going. And he got a really big smile on his face. And I could tell that that meant a lot. And it just broke our hearts because Chris was telling me about that. And I was like, oh no, oh no. And so, that kid was just amazing. And so I hope to God that he, realizes how good he did and he uses that to, I hope that fuels him to keep going because everybody was just so impressed with him, with the way that he was playing, with his sportsmanship, and he's just a stellar kid. So my heart goes out to him.
That's cute. Yeah, you were Mama Campbell. It was like the best.
Damn it, Chris. You're not supposed to tell people I'm nice. Oh, God. It's going to open all sorts of doors now. Like, people are going to come up to meet events and, like, ask how I'm doing and, like, all this. Oh, look what you did. So, jeez. So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I drafted Innistrad the other night.
Wow, that's a blast from the past.
Yeah, one of my friends got her boyfriend, who's also one of my friends, a box of Innistrad for Christmas, I think. And it took them a little while to actually get a draft together, but we ended up drafting it at my place last week, and I drafted the spider spawning deck. I went 0-3. Because everyone else was just like, that's cool, girl. You draft spider spawning. I'm going to try and beat spider spawning by just curving out. And yeah, I played against a lot of very fast white humans decks and white spirits decks. And of course, Robert decided to draft blue-black mill. With Nephalia Drownyard and Cellar Door and yes. Trepanation Blade.
Oh, girl.
And he just, like, put Trepanation Blade on a flyer and, like, milled me for 5 when I had already milled myself for, like, 15. And, yeah, it was not my finest hour. But I will say it was, like, the most fun I've ever had losing because I got to make, like, 11 spiders at one point and there was a game where I gained 18 life because I had a ton of creatures in my graveyard. And I had like two copies of Knot of the Bone. So it was a sweet deck. I had some bad beats, but I still love drafting Innistrad.
That's pretty much how I feel every time I play Vintage. Like, I have so much fun losing. It's not even funny. Yeah. Like, I'm losing on turn one of my upkeep to Storm. I'm losing to the Dredge Mirror. I'm losing to Oath and Saheeli Sun Titan. I'm not even mad. I'm just losing to the most broken things, and it's so much fun.
I think that's a sign of a good format where, like, you don't even have to be playing, like, the best deck, or you don't even have to be doing particularly well, and you're just like, wow, this format is so sweet. Even though I'm not winning, I can still appreciate like how sweet this format is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's definitely That's definitely true. And so I also thought of something else. So on our last episode, we touched on if we were in a roller derby, what would our magic names be? And we received some suggestions on Twitter, which I thought were really good. I'm going to read a couple of them off. Autumn Killo, in replacement of Autumn Willow. I like that one. Serrated Angel. I think that's fine. Slapcaster Page. Come on.
I laughed at that.
Thank you. Emrakil. E-M, like Emma, and then Rakil. There were so many here that I loved. Let me find a couple more. Where did they go? Herza Smiter. H-E-R-Z-A. I thought these were just genius. Did you guys come up with any?
So does your roller derby name have to have like a woman's name in it, or can it just be like any pun?
It can be any pun.
Okay, because so when I used to play Commander, my commander was Momir Vig. So could I be like Momir Vicious or something?
Yes.
Or like Momir Vigorous?
Yes.
I mean, that I would like. I could do that. I could hang with that.
I love Momir Vigorous.
I came up with one. I'm not very creative. It took me a long time. I was just like browsing through all of the cards. Took your tongue, Thalid.
Yeah.
Took a tongue, Thalid.
Yes.
I like that. I couldn't think of anything for Thalid, so I just cut it off at the took your tongue.
Oh, man. But, yeah. Somebody also sent us a tweet. Helsbeth. Helsbeth.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
The Creepy Dolls, if you wanted to like be your team, and also Pack Brat.
I liked Pack Brat a lot.
Yeah, Nerd for All Seasons. Shout out to you for that one. And also, Carrie Zev, Bizarre Skater, which was a take on Bizarre Trader. Yeah, these were really, really sweet.
Yeah.
Chris, did you come up with one?
I couldn't think of anything that seemed appropriate. I even noodled on it while watching the Pro Tour. I'm like, I don't even know. If I think of anything, I'll post it on Twitter. I'm bad. I was just like, I don't even I just don't even know.
You failed the assignment, Chris.
I know. I'm bad. I just wanted to say that I'm going to be guesting on the Team Mock Zirconia podcast tomorrow. So I don't know when that will come out, but I will keep people updated. We're going to be brewing a sweet standard deck, so I'm like super excited about brewing. And I just kind of want to plug that a little bit and see what happens. So I'm hoping to hang out with the guys. They all seem really nice. And you can find them on Twitter at Mock Zirconia. And so if you haven't heard their stuff yet, please do. And then the other thing I had is back when we first started the show, there had been a statement that Liz Lamfero had made in an interview with Hipsters talking about working as part of like Wizards Play Network with retailers to identify toxic players, bad blood in the community, working on eradicating that type of thing. And so I followed up with WPN to see if there had been any progress with that. And they were able to tell me just a few things. And I just thought it would be nice for you guys to know any updates that were going on with that. And they said within the past year, they had traveled to trade shows and centered on giving their presentations to retailers about creating welcome environments for everyone. And they did say that diversity is incredibly important, and it's one of their key tenets that they wish to promote in our retailers and player communities. And they also updated their terms and conditions, and they're continuing to evolve the standard to which they hold their stores to. And they also did say that they're trying to provide additional resources, such as suggested codes of conduct to stores, and to help new stores start out right, to kind of give them a place to begin so that they don't end up with these toxic issues in their game store. So, yeah.
Very cool.
That's really nice. Cool.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's H-A-L-C-A-N-S-A-N. And you can also find me at HalCanSan on Instagram and Snapchat.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's M-E-A-N-M-U-G-G-E-R. Or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. My Snapchat is CryptoCommand with K's. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. And I kind of have a hood stream, twitch.tv/Chris. So be sure to check that out. It may be like, kind of like when you go to a rave and they kind of just pop up. That's going to be me. So I can't promise it'll be consistent, but I promise that it'll be entertaining at the very least. Oh, and please get your submissions into me for the No Fear Challenge. I've already received some, and they've been really awesome to read. So please, please, please do that.
When you say like a rave stream, will there be glow sticks? Because
I mean, I think I have a black light somewhere.
I mean, but glow sticks. Some I'd settle for some Darude too.
I can do the Darude.
Okay, just
I can do
I'm
that.
Just, that could be that. Your theme. We've settled this. Katie's got the train theme, which she has yet to capitalize on. Just saying. You know, we each have our things, and yours could be the rave stream. Branding, Chris. Branding.
Damn, you're so good.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAsterus. That's OriginalAsterus. You can email me at OriginalAsterus@gmail.com. Twitch.tv/OriginalAsterus. I will be streaming the Legacy Challenge on Saturday, so feel free to come say hi and watch me dredge my brains out. The show is on Twitter at the GF bracket. We're also on Twitch.tv/the GF bracket, and you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.